Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Kufav Amud Bet. We're continuing with the statement that Rav made, that Moshe Rabbeinu Kohen Gadol Cholek B'Kodshei Shemayim Haya. Rav makes a statement that Moshe Rabbeinu was qualified as a Kohen Gadol. Not only was he a Kohen Gadol, he participated in the distribution of the Matnot Kehuna, and he shared in them with our own Ubanav. So we had brought a challenge to that yesterday, and now we're going to continue through today's daf in providing challenges to that and trying to understand how Rav reconciles with a number of brachot that seem to indicate otherwise. Meitave Miriam Mihisgira. When Miriam became a Mitzorah, at the end of Parshat Balotcha, who was the Kohen that declared her to have Tzarat? Im Tomar Moshe Hizgira. If you say it was Moshe Rabbeinu who did it, Moshe Zarhu. Moshe is not qualified. He is a Zar. Vein Zaru et a Nigaim. And a Zar cannot declare Nigaim to Mehim or to Horim. Vim Tomar Aaron Hizgira. If you say that it was Aaron who did the Hezger, he was the Kohen that did it. Aaron Karofu. Aaron is a relative. Vein Karofu et a Nigaim. And a relative is disqualified from doing the Marot Nigaim. As the Baal Tosfot will point out, that is not clear-cut, that is a machloket tanaim, and Rashi brings the source for this Tana's position, which is b'chol riv, b'chol nega, civil suits, and nega are juxtaposed in the pasuk. Tana of this position believes that just like by rivin, a karov is pasul, so tahu by negaim, a karov is pasul. There is a alternate opinion that says that the limud is ma rivim bayom af nigaim bayom. That hekesh that exists teaches you, just like the civil court cases are done or adjudicated during the day, so too nigaim can only be seen during the day, but they do not disqualify a karov. But obviously our Gemara is following the opinion of Rabbi Meir, who believes that krovim cannot see nigaim, and the truth is that Moshe was also disqualified for being a karov, but Moshe has a more fundamental problem, which is that he is a zar. Ella, Kavod Gadol Chalak La Kodesh Baruch Hu Miriam. Shem gave a tremendous honor to Miriam. Otosha at that moment. Ani Kohen Vani Mazgira Ani Cholta Vani Potra. So Shem says, I am like a Kohen. I am going to declare her Tmeah or a Mitzorat. Mazgira is when you put someone to await the decision as to whether the Nega is Tamei or Tahor. Cholate is when you decide that the Nega is Tamei and that it requires the person to be declared a Mitzora. And Vani Potra is when he discharges her from the status of being a Mitzora to the Nega is no longer problematic. So Shem performs all those things that the Kohen can do with regards to a Nega, which is either lock it up, declare it Tamei, or dismiss it. So Hashem did that instead of the Kohanim, because there was no one there that could take care of Miriam. As the Baal Tosafot point out, there is a Medrash that says that Aaron was so worried about Miriam because there was no Kohen that was going to take care of her. Baal Tosafot questioned that Midrash and say, what was the problem? Without a Kohen, she couldn't become a Mitzorat. So then why does it matter that there was no Kohen to free her of the Tzorat? You need a Kohen to declare you a Mitzora or Mitzorat, and then you need a Kohen to be mitaher you. But if you never have a Kohen to be mitameh you, you don't have to worry about being mitaher. And so the Baal Tosafot leave it as a tzarachiyun as to why Aaron was so worried about it. In this case, there would have been no tzarat because there were nobody to declare her tmeah. On the other hand, the Karen Ora and others try to suggest over here that the tzarat is a form of kapara. And so the person wants to undergo the tzarat or go through the process of being a tmeah and then a tohora, in order to expunge their sin and to provide the kapara that they need. So that's what Aaron was worried about, that Miriam would never be afforded that opportunity. Tanya Miat. Now, after we've gone through the whole Braita, the Gemara comes back to the question that you see in the Braita, Moshe Zar, Ben Zar Ro'et Anigayim. The Braita declares Moshe's disqualification as being a Zar, and not that of a Karov, but more importantly, he's not a Kohen based on this Braita. So how could Rav say that he was a Kohen Gadol? Over there, it's not really relegated to Kohanim, it's relegated to Aaron Ubanav, the descendants of Aaron. Happens to be that the descendants of Aaron are all Kohanim, but there's possibility, based on what we're saying here, that there could be Kohanim outside the descendants of Aaron. And so when the Parshia by Nigaim declares this to be the purview of Aaron Ubanav, then it excludes Kohanim that wouldn't have been Aaron Ubanav. And so therefore, Moshe, even if he was a Kohen, wouldn't have the right to declare a Nega Tahor or Tamei, because he's not Me'aron Ubanav. Meidebe, Chamesh Smachot Haital Elisheva Yitera Al Benot Yisrael, on that day. On that day means the eighth day, the day of the consecration of the Mishkan, Yom HaShmini. Elisheva that we're referring to is Elisheva Bat Aminadav. She is the wife of Aaron. She's also the sister of Nachshon ben Aminadav. So it says here that Elisheva had the glory or the excitement and the happiness of relatives of hers going into positions of power or assuming roles of authority. There are five of those. Yivama, her brother-in-law, was the Melech. That's Moshe Rabbeinu. Isha, her husband, Kohen Gadol. That's Aaron. Bina, her son, which was Nadav, and then later on Elazar, Skan, was the second in command of the Kohen. Ben Bina, Meshuach Milchama. Her grandson, Pinchas, was a Meshuach Milchama. This is a reference to Moshe's appointing Pinchas to lead the battle against Midian, and he was the Meshuach Milchama at that time. That has to be reconciled with what we saw in the Gemara yesterday, that there were opinions that Pinchas did not become a Kohen until later, including those opinions that said he didn't become a Kohen until the time of Yoshua bin Nun. And so those opinions would have to work out how to reconcile with this Braita. Obviously, they can either argue on the Braita, or they can say that this was spoken in Latit, and that was speaking for the future. It wasn't speaking about in the current sense, but that in the future he would be. And so they included in the list. Vachia and her brother, Nachshon ben Aminadav, Nasi Shevet. He was the prince of Shevet Yehudah, and he was first in Nasim to bring the Korbanot on that Yom HaShmini. In addition to that, Vavila Ashnei Baneha. At that same time, she was also mourning over the loss of her two children. And so this speaks to the mixed emotions of the day, which is that Elisheva is experiencing both the highs, the joy of all these people who are within her close family being elevated to positions of authority. In the meantime, her two sons also passed away on that day, and she's mourning her two sons. Now, what's interesting over here is that she was not the only one that had this. You could say the same thing for Aaron. Aaron was in the exact same position as Elisheva, just that his brother was the king, his brother-in-law was the Nasi, and so on and so forth. You could go through the whole list and have the same five smachot, and his two sons also passed away. Either you have to say that the perspective over here is from someone who was not on the inside, but someone who was on the outside. Elisheva touches all those individuals who have joy associated with them. She also touches those individuals where there was mourning associated with them. Aaron himself was anointed as the Kohen Gadol. So that's different when he personally experienced of being elevated. So that's one way to deal with it and say why they picked Elisheva instead of Aaron. The other reason is that Aaron, as the Kohen Gadol, was actually not allowed to display Avilut, and he had to actually subvert his feelings and his emotions of Avilut because of the command of the show must go on, which is that the Yom HaShmini continues, and he's not allowed to leave the Ol Moed, and he's not allowed to rent his garments, he's not allowed to let his hair grow out, he's not allowed to do any of the normal displays of Avilut, because of the holiness and the specialness of the day. And so therefore he's actually precluded from demonstrating or showing any emotion or avilut. And so that maybe that's why Aaron would not be the right person to pick, because that wouldn't show you the contrast of those emotions, because Aaron was not allowed to display the emotions with regards to the avilut. And I think that might be why over here Elisheva is picked, because Elisheva is the one who's experiencing those tearing emotions, contrasting emotions in her experience of the day. And that's what the Midrash is trying to point out. Whereas Aaron, because of his preclusion, was actually not necessarily experiencing or able to show those emotions that were associated with his children because of his position. His position as being the representative of Klal Yisrael, the Kohen HaGadol, makes it into a person of the public sphere, a person that belongs to the world of Kodesh, and therefore he's almost in a sense precluded from having those mundane emotions. There's, again, we've spoken about this in the past, that there were small demonstrations or things that allowed Aaron to express that, including what we discussed yesterday, which is the Seir HaChatat of Rosh Chodesh, which was burnt because of the Aninut. That at least gave him some form of expression, some form of demonstration of the Avilut, to be that it wasn't something that was wiped out entirely, and that there was no human side to this experience for Aaron, and that might have been represented by the Seir HaChatat. But Elisheva, who's not bound by those rules, she's someone who had all these raw emotions together, and that's what the Midrash is speaking to. Tani Mihat, the purpose of bringing this Midrash is Yivama Melech. It says about Moshe Rabbeinu that her brother-in-law was the king. Melech in Kohen Gadol. Sounds like he was the king but he was not the Kohen Gadol. Ema af melech. No, it doesn't mean that he was exclusively the king and not the Kohen Gadol, but rather he was also the king. He was the Kohen Gadol. Midrash is just listing the unique aspect of each individual. Not that Moshe was not a Kohen Gadol, he's a Kohen Gadol, but also the king on top of that. Kitana'ei. The Gemara in the end says, Machloket Tanaim. There is a Machloket Tanaim as to whether Moshe Rabbeinu was a Kohen Gadol or not, and Rav will subscribe to the opinion that Moshe Rabbeinu was a Kohen Gadol. Vayichar af Hashem b'Moshe. Hashem gets angry at Moshe. This is at the Sneh where Moshe keeps refusing Hashem's overtures to become the leader of Klal Yisrael. And finally, Hashem is exasperated at Moshe's intransience and lack of desire to become the leader, and says, Vayichar af Hashem b'Moshe. Rabbi Shul ben Karach Omer, Kol Chor Naf Shebetorah. Anytime there's anger in the Torah, Nemar Bar Roshem. There's always an impact felt from that anger. Rashi over here gives examples of what that means, Roshem. He says, Pi'amim haka'a. Sometimes it results in a physical hit that is associated with it. Pi'amim nizifa. Sometimes it means the person is chastised or dismissed or pushed away. Pi'amim klala v'giduf. And sometimes it results in a curse. Rashi brings a couple of examples over there. They're interesting, the examples themselves, including the one where he mentions Vayichar af Yaakov b'Rachel, that Yaakov gets angry at Rachel, and it says, Tachad Elokim Anochi, am I instead of God that I can produce children for you? And Rashi says over there, that's Lashon Nizifahu. He was chastising her. He was trying to note to her that she was speaking inappropriately, and then the anger came with that expression. The interesting aspect of that is that the anger itself was the Nizifa. It wasn't that the Nizifa was separate. The anger itself was the statement that he made in anger. So Rashi still claims that that was a Nisifa, and Rashi is getting that from the examples the Gemara is going to bring, as well as the examples he brought, that this is what it means to have a Roshem. So over here, it says, Vayichar af Hashem b'Moshe, yet the Torah never notes that anything happened or came about because of that anger. Zeh lo nemar bo Roshem. And that's what he says over here, there is no Roshem from that anger that God had against Moshe. Hashem b'Yochai omer, av zeh nemar bo Roshem. This too had an impact. Shnemar, halo Aron achicha ha-Levi. As it says with regards to Aaron coming to greet Moshe in the Pasuk in Shmot Dalet, where it describes this interaction with Hashem, it says, Vayichar af Hashem b'Moshe, Vayomer, and Hashem says to him, Halo Aron achicha ha-Levi, yadati ki daber yidaber hu, so he will speak on your behalf. Gamine hu yotze likratecha v'racha v'samach bilibo. And he's now coming to greet you, and he'll be excited to see you return and you to become the leader. So over here it says, Achicha ha-Levi, v'alo kohen hu. Wasn't Aaron a kohen, not a Levi? Achicha amar. Ani amarti. Originally my plan was that Moshe Rabbeinu ata kohen v'hu Levi. You would have been the kohen, he would have been the Levi. Achshav, hu kohen v'ata Levi. He's going to be the kohen, and you're going to be the Levi. So he says there was impact, because until this point it was Aaron achicha ha-Levi, and Aaron was known as the Levi, not as the kohen. Later on we see that he's the one who's anointed to be the kohen, and Moshe Rabbeinu is the one who's the Levi. And so he says that's the result, or that's the Roshem from the Vayichar af Hashem. Hashem's anger made it that Moshe Rabbeinu lost the kuna gedola. V'chamim omrim, lo nitkahen Moshe, ela Shivat Yimei Hamiluim Bilvad. Moshe Rabbeinu was never appointed to be the Kohen. As Rashi says over here, Lo Paskulo Kuhuna Me'olam. He was never given the Kuhuna at all. You could have said that the position of the Chachamim was that he was only a Kohen for the Yimei Hamiluim. The way the Rashi phrases it is that he never was a Kohen, and that he did serve for the Shiva Yimei Hamiluim. But in that time he served not as the capacity of a Kohen, but rather as an emissary of God in order to carry out whatever needed to be done during those Yimei Hamiluim. V'yeshomrim, lo paska kuna, ela mizaro shel Moshe. That Moshe remained a Kohen for his entire life. The cutoff or the removal of the kuna from Moshe Rabbeinu was only in his descendants. Is that Moshe was a Kohen, but his descendants were not Kohanim. And that yeshomrim is the Tano that Rav was connecting to. Rav, who says that he was a Kohen Gadol, is relying on the Yeshomrim over here, that Lo Paska Kuna Mi Moshe Rabbeinu Ela Mizaro Shel Moshe Shenamar. The quote of Pasuk in Divrei Yamim, Umoshe Ish HaElukim Banav Ikaru Al Shevet Levi. So Moshe, the man of God, his children were called by Shevet Levi. So the diuk they want to make is, his children were called by Shevet Levi, Moshe Rabbeinu was not called a Shevet Levi because he was a Kohen, the Omer. And the pasuk that we say every Friday night in Kabbalat Shabbat, Moshe ve'Aharon b'Kohanav, u'Shmuel b'Korei Shemo. So it compared Shmuel to Moshe ve'Aharon, but when it speaks about Moshe Aharon, it gives them both the adjective of b'Kohanav, that they were Kohanim. So you see that Moshe Rabbeinu was a Kohen. My v'Omer, why does it have to bring the second pasuk? V'chi deima l'dorot hu dichtiv. If you want to say the pasuk in Divrei Yamim is not a valid inference, because you can't say that just because it speaks about the children of Moshe, it implies that Moshe was not covered by this, because Moshe wasn't alive at that time. It's in the time of David HaMelech that they're listing out the Levi'im and the families of the Levi'im. So there, Moshe is no longer alive. And what it's saying is that his children were Al Shevet Levi. But you can't necessarily infer from that that Moshe wasn't a Levi. It wasn't speaking about Moshe. It's not relevant to speak about Moshe. So if you make that claim, Vomer, then I have another proof from Tehillim that Moshe v'Aaron be Kohanav. That Moshe and Aaron are both known as Kohanim. So you see from here that you have a difference of opinion as to how Moshe served in terms of the Kuhuna. You have an opinion here in the Eish Lomrim that he was a Kohen and remained a Kohen for the entirety of his life. And that would be like what Rav says, that he joined in the Chalukah of the Korbanot like the other Kohanim. We have the Chachamim's position, which is that Moshe Rabbeinu only served during the Shivat Yimei HaMiluim Bilvad. Then, in that case, it's a question if he served in the capacity as a Kohen, but you could formulate that way from what the Gemara says, or he served in the capacity as a emissary, or and maybe even a teacher of Aaron Ubanav. And that is that Moshe Rabbeinu, during the Shivat Yimei HaMiluim, had to serve because Aaron Ubanav were yet to be consecrated and anointed as the Kohanim. Once they are consecrated, anointed as the Kohanim, they take over on the eighth day as the Kohanim. But until that point in time, Moshe Rabbeinu as the acting Kohen, or really the teacher of Aaron, so that Aaron could learn from him. That's the whole part and purpose of Miluim or Chinuch, is that they are teaching. There's a passing of the baton to the new Kohanim, and Moshe Rabbeinu is the one who does it. Now, why Moshe Rabbeinu was the one to do it is either because Moshe Rabbeinu was the one most intimately involved with the Mishkan, and he's the one who put up the Mishkan and put it together and brought it into service. And therefore, he's the one most familiar with that which needed to be done, and therefore, he was the Kohen that taught the other Kohenim until they came into service. Or because Moshe Rabbeinu is always the emissary of God in these situations, and so Moshe Rabbeinu was doing the bidding of God by teaching the Kohenim and taking the Kohenim, and since there's nobody else to do it in the interim, Moshe Rabbeinu becomes the Kohen during the Shivat Yimei HaMiluim when there are no Kohanim. He acts as the Kohen. And you can see that based on the Gemara that we've seen before, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, the Gemara in Tanit, with regards to the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu did not wear Bigdei Kuhuna when he served as the Kohen or Kohen Gadol during the Shivat Yimei HaMiluim. Rather, he wore a Chaluk Lavan. He wore a tunic made out of white, a linen, serving the Mikdash during that period of time, which would indicate that he really wasn't a Kohen. He was just an acting emissary of God because he didn't really have Bigdei Kuhuna, and so he never really attained that full status of Kohen. And we've discussed in the past the stira between that which is found in Parshat Pikudei, which seems to indicate that Moshe served on the eighth day in the Mishkan as the Kohen Gadol, and that which is found in Parshat Shmini in Vayikra, that Aaron was the Kohen Gadol and the one who served on the eighth day. And the machloket that we find based in the Ramban and in the Girsa and Rashi, discussed that in the past, that the eighth day was actually a big question mark, because the two different Sfarim give two different answers to that question. But as far as the Shivat Yimei HaMiluim, it's clear that Moshe was the one who served, just in what capacity is the question here. And then the other question is, after the eighth day, what was Moshe's status? And over here you have a machloket Tanaim as to what happened to Moshe after the Shivat Yimei HaMiluim or after the Yom HaShmini. And so now the Gemara says, is it really true what you just said before? You took it as axiomatic, and the Gemara says, "V'chol charon af shebatorah never baroshem." Is it really true? Anytime there's anger in the Torah, there's some demonstrated effect or impact of that anger. V'aktiv. What about the fact that it says, "V'yetzei mi'im paro b'choriyaf v'lo amarle v'lo mide"? When Moshe exits from Paro at the end of the Makot, when after Makat Choshech, Paro is about to let the people go, and then he decides that he's not going to let them go, and he wants to throw Moshe out, and he says, don't return here again. And Hashem appears to Moshe before he leaves the palace of Paro and says, you got to tell him one more thing. Makat Bechorot is coming. So Moshe Rabbeinu relays that to Paro. And after he finishes, because he's angry at Paro for throwing him out and saying that he's not going to listen anymore, it says there at the end, Moshe leaves in anger. Velo Amarle, Velo Mide. And we don't see that there was any impact from that. Amar Ish Lakish, Staro Veyatza. He slapped him across the face and he left. So that was the impact. That was one of the things that Rashi mentioned as a roshim before, was Haka'ah. If there was some physical hit that took place, that was a result of the anger. So here, the suggestion is that Moshe's anger did make a roshim, is that he slapped Paro in the face. Now, even though that's not written in the Torah, that might be because of Kvod Malchut, or because it's so obvious that Vayetze Mim Paro Bechariyaf.
Because it doesn't separate the action of leaving from the Chariyaf. It doesn't say that he was angry and then left. It says that he left in anger. And that's what indicates that something else took place, that when he left in anger, it sounds like he did something in leaving in anger.
There are those that suggest that this Sitaro V'yatza is not literally that he slapped him in the face, but that the poignancy of this statement that he made was as if he slapped him in the face. And so it's not a literal, but a figurative slap in the face. Although from Rashi, it sounds like he took it very literally, because he says, Pe'amim Haka'ah. And there he's obviously referencing to what we're discussing over here, that sometimes there are physical results, a Roshem impact from by the Charonaf. Where it says, V'mi'amar Reish Lakish Hachi. Does Reish Lakish really believe that Moshe was willing to act in a way that denigrated the Malchut, the royalty of Mitzrayim? V'aktiv, doesn't it say, in the beginning of the Makot, when Hashem commands Moshe to go out and greet Paro and to do for him the first Makah of Dam, v'nitzavta likrato asfata yor, that you should stand there and greet him at the banks of the Yor. So over there it says v'nitzavta, v'amar Reish Lakish, melechu. What does it mean v'nitzavta? That he is a king, he is of royalty, v'izbir lo panim, and you have to do deference towards him because of the fact that he is royalty. Rabbi Yochanan amar rashahu. What does it mean v'nitzavta? Nitzavta means that he is an evil person, v'iz panechavo. And therefore, minitzavta means to go up against him, that you will fight him, and you will take him down, meaning that you're allowed to, in a sense, denigrate him, or treat him in a dismissive manner, because of the fact that he is a rasha. So the truth is that the word minitzavta is used in the Torah in both meanings, that sometimes minitzavta means to stand erect, or to stand out of kavod, or respect from whoever's there. And sometimes, natzavta is used in the context of quarrel. For instance, by Datan Vaviram, that it says they were nitzavim when it comes to Parshat Korach, when they are fighting against Moshe Rabbeinu. So you see the word nitzav used both in the context of positive, respectful royalty to stand before in deference, and also used to mean that they are fighting, debating, or arguing with. That is the machloket between Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan. Problem is that Reish Lakish over here is saying that he has to show deference to the Malchut. How could he slap the king across the face if he's commanded to show deference to the Malchut? So Epoch, just flip around their positions. Flip Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish's positions, and then Rabbi Yesh Lakish's opinion would be aligned. I'm Rabbi Yanai. La'olam te'i imat Malchut alecha. You should always have the fear of the king upon you, the fear of rulership upon you. Dichtiv, ve'erdu kol avadecha ela elai. It says with regards to Makat Bechorot that Moshe Rabbeinu declares to Paro that he and his servants will all come down to me. He doesn't say, you are going to come and beg for us to leave. And even though in the end, that's what happened. Paro comes down and begs them, bows down and begs them to leave. Nevertheless, Moshe, when he's describing the event, ascribes the event to Paro's servants and not to Paro himself. So you see, he gave deference to the king and the ruling authority. And again, here we have the concept that the Gemara in Brachot speaks about, which is that Malchuta da'ara gain Malchuta d'shmayo, that the kingship or the kingdom down below is representative or similar to the kingdom above, which means that a person who learns how to act appropriately, subordinate themselves to the king, and give deference to the king, will act that same way when it comes to the real king, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we have that in the Gemara Brachot, which speaks about running to see the kings, not only Jewish kings, but even non-Jewish kings. When you see non-Jewish kings, you understand what a Jewish king is supposed to be like, or you understand royalty. And understanding royalty is also understanding Malchuta d'Shmaya, understanding what a Kodesh Baruch Hu is. And again, if you see so many of the Mishalim that are brought in the Midrashim, and descriptions of Tefillah and all these other items, are all brought about a person who goes before a king, bows down before a king, is in fear of the king. All of those are real experiences when you have such a person of authority. And when you have experienced that, you realize that nothing's in your own control. You're at the mercy of the king. Similar to the way that we are at the mercy of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then for those individuals who have that experience, it's much easier to understand the rulership and the godliness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And so over here, there's an obligation to have Emat Malchut, or the other reason might be for the Mishnah Navot, which is if you don't have that, you're going to have anarchy. It'll be untenable, and therefore Emat Malchut is important just for keeping things orderly. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Mihalcha, Yochanan says you can learn it from here, which is the story of Eliyahu and Navi, V'yad Hashem Haita El Eliyahu. Hashem's hand was with Eliyahu, V'yishanes Mutnav, he girded his loins, V'yiretz Lifnei Achav. And then he runs in front of the king, Achav. This is right after the showdown at the Carmel, where Eliyahu and Navi wins the showdown. They kill all the Nevi'i Baal. And after all that showdown happens, all of a sudden a small cloud starts to appear on the horizon, and the rain clouds for the first time in many years start to come, and they think that the rain's going to come. Achav, after that, is going back to his royal city in Israel. And so he leaves from Har Carmel, and Eliyahu and Navi accompanies him, either as Rashi says over here, because Achav was traveling alone and it was inappropriate, so Eliyahu accompanies him, or because that's the normal way that people go. They have someone who is either driving or going in front of them out of respect for the position of the individual. And since nobody was accompanying Achav, Eliyahu Navi himself did it, and he runs in front of Achav. So you see, despite the clear difference in the stature of Eliyahu Navi and Achav, who is a mixed king, but definitely in the end, a Rasha, and Eliyahu HaNavi, who is the great Eliyahu HaNavi, nevertheless, he runs in front of the king, so you see from this that you have to give deference to the king. Right. Amar Ula, Bikesh Moshe Malchut, V'net lo nitano lo. Moshe wanted to be the king, and it was not granted to him. Tichtev, Al Tikrav Halom. That's by the Sneh. When he's approaching the Sneh, Hashem says to him, or the voice comes after him, and says, Al Tikrav Halom, don't come closer. Ven alom el malchut, and the word alom is used in the context of malchut. Shnemar mi anochi Hashem Elokim v'mei beiti kiviatani ad alom. Who am I, Hashem, and my house kiviatani ad alom, that you brought me until this point? This is David HaMelech in the beginning of Shmuel Bet, when he, after he's brought the Aron up to Yerushalayim, and the Aron is sitting in a tent and he's living in a palace, he thinks that how could it be that this disparity exists? I need to build a Mikdash for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So then Natan HaNavi dissuades David based on the Tzivoy Hashem from building the Bayit. But in that dissuasion, he declares that Hashem will be with David, and that he will be with his children, and that it will establish the Davidic dynasty, and that his son who follows after him will be the one who builds the Mikdash. So in response to that, David HaMelech says, Vayomer Melech David, Vayeshev Lifnei Hashem, Bayor mi anochi Hashem Elokim, umi beiti ki hiviotani ad halom. Vatiktan od zot beinecha Hashem Elokim, vetaber gam el beit avdechol merachok, vzot rat adam Hashem Elokim. So David is shocked, surprised, that Hashem has not only promised David HaMelech that he will be the king, he's now promised him that there will be a Davidic dynasty, and he says about that, I'm smaller than that, I'm not deserving of the fact that you were promised me such a thing. You see in the context of establishing a dynasty of kings that they use the term halom. So Nemetiv Rabba, Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Yivama Melech. Wait a minute. You just told me that Moshe requested to be the king and he was rejected. But yet the Midrash before said that Moshe Rabbeinu, in the context of the five things that Elisha was celebrating, Yivama, her brother-in-law, was the Melech, referring to Moshe Rabbeinu. Amarava lo ulzaro kamar. When we're talking about Halom, being that Moshe requested Malchut, it's not that he requested Malchut for himself, he requested that he would set up a dynasty of Moshe Rabbeinu, who would be the leaders of Klal Yisrael. Ho echa dichtiv Halom l'doroto. Is that really true? Anytime you use the terminology Halom, it's not about the particular individual, but also about the future. Gabi Shaul dichtiv. What about by the fact by Shaul it says, Vayavo od Halom ish, and he came to that point, the ish, the man, and it says, who in Zarolo? And over there by Shaul, it was he that was a king, but his descendants were not kings. So how can you say the term Halom is implicit in it, or embedded in the word Halom, is a dynasty of leaders. Ivaitema ha hava ish boshet, that he did establish a dynasty, which is that he did have one descendant that followed after him, which was ish boshet, however short lived that was. Nevertheless, he did have a child that followed in his footsteps. Some say that it's different because by Sha'ul, even about himself, it was not Mikuyam. So that's the Gemara's answer. Rashi over here does what I would have assumed the Gemara would have answered, that the answer is that he was awarded the kingship in the first place. He was awarded it both for himself and for his children after him, but then he lost it. He did things wrong that lost the kingship for his children, and then he lost it for himself afterwards in another violation of the command of Hashem. So he did originally have that promise of the dynasty of Beit Sha'ul, and then he lost it. That's what I would expect the Gemara to answer, but the Gemara answers, Shani Sha'ul Dafilu B'Gavei Lokaim. Even for himself, the kingship did not last. That's unique about Sha'ul, that Sha'ul wasn't even talking about a dynasty because he himself didn't last as the king. Rashi, in explaining that, says, Ushapaskulo l'Sha'ul Malchut Olamit Paskulo. When they gave him it originally, he did get an everlasting kingship. It just was taken away. And that's why halom is not misused in that context. Kid Rabbi Lazam Rabbi Chanina, Shash poskim gedula l'adam, poskim lo ulzaro atzof kol adorot. When Hashem determines that an individual is deserving of a position of authority to be elevated to rulership, then he doesn't only do it for that individual themselves, but he also does it for all of his generations afterwards. In essence, he's setting up a dynasty. Shenamar, the pasuk in Iyov says, Lo yigra mitzadik einav. Hashem will not take away or diminish from the tzadik his eyes. Vet milachim lakisei. And associating that individual with the king, with the throne, or the tzaddik, will then be amongst those that are elevated to the throne, or those are of a higher stature. Vayoshivim lanetzach vaygbo. So that's missing from the quote here in the Gemara, which is that vayoshivim lanetzach, that he will seat them forever vaygbo and elevate him. So there the netzach shows you that when Hashem chooses an individual to be elevated, when he plucks them out, of those that are not doing good. Here it's in the context of lo yechayeh rasha, mishpat aniyim yitain, lo yigram mitzadik, the tzadik will not be denied that which he deserves, and he will be elevated. But not only will he be elevated, but yoshivim lenetzach. But then, v'imigis dato, akadosh baruch hu mashpilo. If he becomes haughty in that position, then Hashem pushes him back down. And that's the subsequent pasuk in Iyov, which says, v'im asurim bazikim yilachdun b'chavle oni. So if they are bound by the fetters, yilachdun, then they will be trapped, b'chavleoni, in cords of affliction. So the way Rashi explains it over here is, b'imasurim b'zikim is not the literal that they are bound up in fetters or in chains, but rather it is the person who has been overcome by his gava. He has not been able to manage it, and now he's asur. He is a prisoner or bound by his zikim, by his haughtiness, by his gavut alev, then the result of that is yilachdun b'chav le'oni. Then he will be captured or trapped in cords of affliction. And that means that Hashem, and the remaining psukim there in that parak in Iyob, speak about how Hashem takes corrective action against those that are doing wrong. And so this is one type of corrective action that is taken, that Hashem, even though he elevates people and puts them in positions of power and stature, nevertheless, when they misbehave or they do the wrong thing, Hashem takes corrective action. And so that's the Gemara is hinting to over here, that Sha'ul HaMelech, despite the fact that he was enough when he was chosen to be the king and he ran away from Gedula, once he did become the king, he was Megis Lipo. Whether that's because of the actions he took against Nov Yerah Kohanim, whether that's because of the way he conducted himself against David HaMelech, or in the fact that he did not follow the command of Hashem or the command of the Navi, all these are demonstrations of a certain amount of egis libo, or gavut alev, and therefore he was punished with being a mashpilo, thrown back down. Now, this is interesting in the context of other gemarot that deal with whether there's such a concept as inheritance for power and positions of power. In a very hierarchical society, the gemara does speak about this. It speaks about inheritance of power being passed to the child. The Torah speaks about it in the context of Melech versus Kohen Gadol. A Melech or a king is a dynasty that is coming through birthright, and that the child has the first right to the throne, especially when you would then have the establishment of the Davidic line, who are supposed to be the only kings and the kings forever, so then it's always through the birthright that they are kings. Whereas the Kohen Gadol even though he has a child who is obviously a Kohen, but that doesn't necessarily give him precedence to be the Kohen Gadol. Now, if he's Ra'ur to the Kohen Gadol, he will get priority in terms of being picked as the Kohen Gadol, but there's no guarantee that because the father was a Kohen Gadol, that the child will be entitled to a Kohen Gadol. There's no Yerusha of the Kuhuna. So you see two different models of power, where you have one model of power where it's passed from father to child, and another model of power where it's not passed from father to child, and the next generation has to be deserving of that. So there is a Gemara that says that when it comes to Torah, that Bechuta Mishulash Lo Bimheira Yinatek, that when you have a three-ply cord, it does not tear easily. And therefore the Gemara says that anybody who has three generations who are Asukim B'Torah, then Torah will not leave them, because the Torah Machzer D'Achsanya Shalah, that those families will be steeped in Torah. The Sukim that we say at the beginning of Vavli Tzion are a reference to that, that Lo Yamush Torah Tcha Mipi Zari Mipi Zera Zari, that there are three generations, the Torah should stay within one's family, so that you have the Kiyum of Chuta Mishulash Lo Bimheri Yinatek. I think this story is said about Rav Yitzchak Mivolozhin, that when he was very young, 5 or 6 year old, he asked the following question. He said, did Avram Avinu learn Torah? He said, yes. Did Yitzchak Avinu learn Torah? Yes. Yaakov Avinu learn Torah? Yes. He says, then every Jew has three people at the beginning of their ancestors that learned Torah, and therefore Torah should not leave any family because Lo Bimheira Yinatek. So his older brother answered him that you have to differentiate. There is the fact that you have a family that is made up of people who learn Torah, that's not necessarily a guarantee that you will learn Torah. What that does provide for you is the raw material. It provides you the environment, the fertility in which you can grow up to be a Talmud Chacham. But in the end, you can't just become a Talmud Chacham because your father was a Talmud Chacham, your grandfather, your great-grandfather were Talmud Chachamim. You have to earn it on your own. And so there is this balance, almost dialectic, within the establishment of people following in the footsteps of their parents in terms of power, where in the areas of political realm and authority, generally we do say that the child takes precedence and that it is something along the lines of a birthright. In the religious realm, like by the Kuna and by like Talmud Torah, over there we say that it is not an inheritance, but it is something where those individuals get precedence and priority because of the fact that they are born to families that already have this within the family, but they still have to earn it on their own. If they don't earn it, they don't automatically get that and do not inherit it. And there is another aspect of that which the Gemara speaks about, which is that Eina Yerushalach, that's the Mishnah Navot, that Torah is not a Yerusha to anyone, and everyone has to learn Torah and earn that on their own. So in this area, there is some of a balance, and you see here in the Gemara speaking to this issue about the idea of setting up dynasties and the fact that there will be familial rulership that will last. Over here, the Gemara brings, Pashash Poskim Gdula L'Adam, Poskim Lo L'Zaro Ad Sof Kol HaDorot. A person is given a position of authority, it's not only for themselves, but their families, but there are ways to lose it. So even though if the person's given it, and it's given for eternity, that eternity can be lost if someone doesn't act in the appropriate manner or conduct themselves appropriately within that position of power. The other thing to discuss over here is whether there can be a king outside of Beit David. But from this Gemara, it makes it sound like there is a possibility of appointing kings outside of the Shoshelet of David. The Rishonim have to deal with this in a number of questions, one of which is Malchut Yisrael. Malchut Yisrael, which is condoned by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is set up by a Navi. Is there a problem with Malchut Yisrael? Is there a violation of Lo Yisir Shevet Mi'uda M'chukek B'ben Raglav? The fact that the Torah says that Yehuda will be the sole rulers, and they're the ones who are going to carry the staff of authority. So establishing a alternate Malchut, is that a violation of Lo Yisir Shevet Mi'uda M'chukek B'ben Raglav? As well as the fact that the appointment of Shaul and his children as the kings, how does that square away with Lo Yisur Shevet Mi'iz Yehuda U'mechokek Mi'ben Raglav? So the Rambam says, Malchut Beit David Hem Omdim Le'olam Shenemar Ki Sachai Yeh Nachon Ad Olam Aval Im Yamod Melech Mishar Yisrael Vasak HaMalchut Mi'Beito Sharei Ne'amar Li'Ravam Ach Lo Kol HaYamim. So the Rambam says over here that the difference between Malchut Beit David and other kings is the eternal nature of the Davidic line. The Davidic line will always be forever, whereas the line of Yeravam and Nevat, who's the first of the Malchei Israel, Hashem says, even when he establishes it, this is not going to be forever. This is a temporary situation. And that temporary situation is what makes it not a violation of the idea that Kisacha Yeh Nachon Ad Olam, that David will be the king forever. The Ravid over there says, Soter Mashamar Lamaula, Velo Machut Bilvad, that it's not only the kingship, but any position of authority, the Rambam says, have to come from Shevet Yehuda. And how could he indicate that Yeravam ben Nevat, even if he's not the eternal king, he still has a position of authority. He has a rulership position. How can it be? Kenu ilu haya Yeravam melech kasher ubanav kasherim, lo hayta machut posekat mizaro. Rabbi disagrees. He said if Yeravam had done what was right and followed the ways of Hashem, he would have been king eternally. Aval hayta shniya lemachut beit David. He would have been the vice king. He would have been the viceroy of the kingship. Kagon Kesar, Upaleg Kesar, like the Caesar and the Vice Caesar. So the Raifud answers the problem by saying that there can be kings or rulers from other Shvatim or other dynasties, but they will all be subordinate to the King David. Implied in that is the answer to the question about how could Shaul and his children be picked as kings. For the Raifud, the answer is because they would have been set up a situation in which David would have been the primary king, and then Shaul and his children would have been the secondary rulers. That seemingly is what David and Yonatan wanted to set up in their alliance. The Rambam, on the other hand, will say that Shaul was never picked as an eternal king. He was picked to be a king temporarily, and that's why it's not a problem. Although our Gemara seems to indicate, in the way Rashi explains it, that Shaul would have been a king, and would have been a king forever had it not been for the mishaps and the missteps that he took. The Ramban on the Pasuk in Sefer Breshit asked the question that you raised, which is, what about the Chashmonaim? And what about Shaul HaMelech? So he says, V'inyan Shaul Haya, Ki Bavur Shadavar Shilat HaMachut Beit Ha'in Nit'av Itzal Kadosh Baruch Hu. The whole establishment of a kingship at that time was something that Hashem was not happy with. Lo Ratzal HaMlich Aleihem Min HaShevet Asher Lo HaMachut. So Yisir Mimenu Ulamim, Natalahem Machut Sha'ah, was a temporary king. That's how the Ramban deals with it, that Shaul was only put in temporarily, and it was a reaction to the request of the people. They didn't want to put in Machut Beit David, because Hashem knew that it was not going to last, because of the fact that it was something that he was not happy about in the way that they asked. And that's why Hashem picked it from Beit Shaul. On the other hand, he quotes the Pasuk from Shmuel Aleph, which seems to indicate that Hashem promises him that he will get the kingship ad olam. Shem lo chata haya lezerol machut b'Yisrael, lo al kulam. He says to answer that question, that Shaul would have been a king, but he would not have been the king on the entire Israel. Bezetam el Yisrael. Ulayim oleich shifte imo, al binyamin Ephraim Menashe. Maybe he would have just been al b'nei Rachel, or he would have been subordinate to Melech Yehuda. So he actually brings the possibility of how Malchut Shaul would have existed. And in that way, he would have also answered possibly the question about Malchut Yisrael. But the next line in the Ramban is, Lefi dati, hayu melachim ha-molchim al-Yisrael mishar shvatim achrei David, ovrim al-dat aviyem ovrim nachala. That they were in violation of an Isur. V'em yusumchim al-dvar achiyah shiloni. And the reason they did it is because they had a Novi who said it. Shemashach li-Ravam, who anointed Ravam. V'asher heirichu Yisrael amlich alayem mishar shvatim, Melech HaKamelech, Lo Yechuzrim HaMachut Yudah, Avru Atzavatam HaZakeim, and then Shubahem. And he says that the truth is that Yeravam, again, was only a temporary situation, and the kings after him who relied on Echiyah Shiloni, and therefore stayed in power, were doing it incorrectly, and they should have returned to Machut Yudah. And so the Ramban sees this idea that the Machut Yudah will be the sole leadership as being a very strong thing. And then, to your question, and that is why the dynasty of the Chashmonim ended so badly. Even though they did great things, the whole story of Hanukkah comes from them, nevertheless they were punished severely because they took over the Malchut when they shouldn't have taken over the Malchut, especially since they were Kohanim. And there should have been a separation of those authorities. And And they said that the Mida Kenegri Mida was that they were punished, that their own servants rebelled against them. Herod, in the story of the Gemara in Baba Batra, rebelled against them and then subordinated them to the authority of the Abadim. And he sees the Hashmoneim being in violation of this Isur to have the kingship leave Shevet Yehuda. Ran in the Drashot HaRan says the Brachot of Yaakov Avinu are not an indication that only Malchut will come from Beit David or from Shevet Yehuda, but rather, Chem Yehuda yidaber al derech ha-hoda v'avtacha v'amar lo yusur Shevet Yehuda komar im sheyachatu malkeha. If their kings of Yehuda sin, adayin lo yegea unsham shetisalek v'dasur me'am ha-melucha legamre, their punishment will never be that the kingship will leave them entirely. Fikach, iftiach Yaakov Yehuda, sh'afu pi sheyachatu melachav, lo yegea chatatam lasir me'am ha-melucha legamre. Idea being that Yehuda's promised an everlasting, eternal dynasty as the leadership of Bnei Israel, what is not promised, or what is not clear, is how large that rulership will be, or how much it will cover. They will have some form of rulership. They will never be taken out entirely or removed entirely, but they can be diminished in some way. That would be another way to explain this question about how were there other kings. And that's why, even though there was no leader in Yehuda, there's never a promise that no other king will arise. Once Yehuda starts, it will never stop forever. So first of all, to have a king before the start of the dynasty of Yehuda is fine. And number two is even after that, there can be other kings, as long as there is a king of Yehuda that is left, or some residual of the Malchut of Yehuda. And therefore the Ran believes, unlike the Ramban, that the Hashmonaim were no problem to take over as the kings, because they were not in violation of Lo Yisur Shev Yehuda, because all that means is that there has to be some rulership from Yehuda, but it doesn't mean that anybody else who rules is problematic. So that's just a sidebar with regards to the Lo Yisur Shev Yehuda, and that how that fits into what we just discussed here. And so now the Gemara continues and says, Balu Mimim, Ben Balei Mumim Kvuyim, Ben Balei Mumim Ovrim, that they are allowed to partake in the Kodoshim, not only partake, but also to split. They're part of the Chalukah of the Kodoshim. Minayani Mile. How do we know that is true? Talmud Lomar. The Pasuk says, in Vayikra Vav, Pasuk Yud Aleph, that the guards to the Mincha, Kol Zachar Bibnei Aron Yochalena, Chak Olam Ador Techem Yisheh Hashem, Kol Asher Yigabahem Yigdash. So that Kol Zachar, the Rabot, Balei Mumim, comes to include Balei Mumim. Lamai. What are you including Balei Mumim when you say Kol Zachar? What's the reboot for? Ila Achila. If it's going to permit them to eat the korbanot, that we already know from Parashat Emor, Vayikra Chaf Aleph Pasuk Chaf Bet, where it says about the Balei Mumim, those Kohanim that are disqualified, and what the Mumim are that disqualify them, Lechem Elukav Mikodshei HaKodoshim Umir HaKodoshim Yochel. So there it tells you that they have a right to eat the Balei Mumim. So Hari Kvar Ne'amar, that's already said. So then, what is the purpose of this? Ella L'Chalukah. Kol Zachar must be coming to tell you that they have the right to be amongst those that split the korbanot, not just amongst those that eat the korbanot. Tanya Yidach, you have another time that the word Kol Zachar is used there in Vayikra Vav. That's the one that we've discussed previously with regards to the Chatat. It says Kol Zachar v'Kohanim Yochal Ota Kodesh Kodoshim Hi. So again here, the Rabot Balei Mumim, to include Balei Mumim. Lamai, what are they being included for here? Ila Chila Harei Kvar Amur. If they need to be included for Chila, you already include them Parshat Emor. Ila Chalukah, Harei Kvar Amor. If you're going to include them in the fact that they get to divide up with the Korbanot, with the other Kohanim, that you already brought me from the Mincha. Sheyachol, Ein Li Elatam, V'Naseh Balmo. You would have thought this only has application to a Kohen who was once Kasher, and then became a Balmo. Balmo Mi Karo, someone who's a Kincherodo Balmo. Mi Nayin, how do you know that he has a right to not only eat from the Korbanot, but also divide amongst the other Kohanim? Tamalomar Kol Zachar. That's what the Kol Zachar by the Chatat comes to teach you. Tanidach, then we have a third braita, which is Kol Zachar, the Rabot Balmo. That is a third braita, which is referring to Vayikra Zayin, Pasuk Vav, which is the Torah Ta'asham. And over there it says, Kol Zachar B'Kohanim Yochlenu, B'Makom Kadosh Yachel Kodesh Kodeshim Ho. So that's about the Asham. Lamai, again here, what's the reboy for the Balmo? Ila Achila Arei Kvar Amor. If it's Rachila, you already did that in Parshat Amor. Ila Chaluka Harei Kvar Amor. If it's for the dividing up, that's already established in the pasuk by the mincha, and vomu meikar is already taken care of by the kol zachar by the chatat. So this is what we need it for. Ein yela bamum kavua. That's only a bamum who is a permanent bamum. Bamum over minayin. How do you know someone's a temporary bamum? Also that they are qualified here. Tamaloma kol zachar. That's what the last kol zachar comes to teach you by the Hashem. It says klapei ayo. That just means just the opposite. You would have assumed that a person with a mum over is much more qualified than someone who has a mum kavua. So why is the Havamina, oh, it only applied to someone who's a mum kavua would have this right to be the chalukah, but someone who has a mum over wouldn't? You would have said just the opposite. Some Rav Sheshet, Epoch, flip it around and say, I would have thought it only applies to a mum over. Kol Zachar comes to teach you, even someone who's a permanent bamum has the right to be amongst the chalukah, the splitting of the korbanot. Vashimar lolom lo teipuch. You don't have to flip it around. Itzrich. And you need it in this logical way because sakadat chamina ki tamei. That he would be similar to a tamei. Ma tamei kama delo tahor lo achil. A tamei, as long as he's not tahor, he doesn't partake. Avai nami kama delo mitakein lo achil. As long as he doesn't get fixed, meaning that he says temporary balmum, he won't be able to eat. Kamashmalan, that he's able to eat. I would compare this to the area of bitul. We have something that's davar sheyesh lo matirin. If something is permanently problematic, we say that bitul works. Where something has the capacity to be fixed, we say that bitul cannot work. That's davar sheyesh lo matirin is enu batul afilu be'elef. So similarly over here, someone a mum over can be fixed, and therefore while he is in the state of having the mum, he'll be like a tamei, and he'll be suspended from doing anything in the mikdash, including being a participant in the chalukah. The other hand, some of the mum kabua, he's for sure disqualified. He'll never be able to do avoda. Therefore, there's nothing to wait for, and he'll be the one who has the right to be participate in the chalukah, because his status will never change. And so you would have thought that a mum kavua would be more likely to be a participant in the chalukah than a mum over. Kamash Malan is that the Kol Zachar by the Hashem teaches you that even someone that a mum over has that right to join in the chalukah and to participate in the division of the korbanot. The Mishnah gives a klal, which is kol she'in ra'ui l'avoda, Inu cholek babasar. Anybody who is not ra'oi for avodah cannot participate in the division of the korban. Velo, is that really true? Fari bamum? Bamum is a classic example of someone who is not ra'oi the avodah, to lo ra'oi the avodah, v'cholek, and he's able to participate. Vitu, on top of that, you could be medayek from that statement in the Mishnah, ha ra'oi the avodah cholek. Someone who is ra'oi the avodah has a right to divide it. Harei tamei b'korbanot tzibur. What about someone who's tamei with regards to korbanot tzibur, the ra'oi le'avodah? He can do avodah. He can has the capacity to do avodah here, even as a tamei, because it's korbanot tzibur. Ve'enu cholek. Yet he doesn't have a right to divide up the korban because he is a tamei. Ra'oi la'achila ka'amar. We're not talking about ra'oi le'avodah. We're talking about someone who's ra'oi la'achila. A tamei is not ra'oi la'achila. And therefore, that does disqualify him. But it does present a different problem, which is harei katan, the ra'oi la'achila. We already learned this before. A katan is ra'oi la'achila. He's able to participate in the eating of the korbanot. Ve'enu cholek. But he's not a participant in the chalukah because it says ish be'achiv. Only anashim are allowed to be in the division of the korbanot, but not a katan. By the fact that he was excluded from the chalukah indicates that he is included in the achila. And here you have a katan who is ra'oi la'achila. Ve'enu cholek. Ha lo ktani. Let's start with this. First of all, the negative formulation is not written, which is that it says, kol she'enu ra'oi la'avodah, enu ochel babasar. That's the statement of the Mishnah. You inferred from that, kol she'ra'oi la'avodah, that anybody who is ra'oi la'avodah should be cholek. And now you're running into a problem, because you have a katan, who is ra'oi la'achila, enu cholek. Where it says, the tiyuk was never written explicitly. You only are medayek something out of a statement in the Mishnah, where that statement itself is so pashut, that you don't need it to teach you anything. So since it doesn't teach you anything, it must be teaching you what you can infer from it. On the other hand here, the statement itself is important, and therefore you don't have to make the inference. So when it says, let's go back to our original formulation about ro'i l'avoda. If you're talking about tamei, tamei loktani. Tamei is not written. I mean, it never writes, kol ro'i l'avoda, so therefore you can't have the question from tamei by korbanot tzibur. If you have Balmum, that is the Rachmana Rabye. The Rachmana, the Torah has a specific riboy that includes the Balmum. This is similar to what we said before in the Gemara, that Balmum is really the exception to the rule, and you can't establish any precedence from this, because the Balmum has a special riboy in the Pasuk. The truth is that the Gemara back there brought another example example, which is a Kohen Gadol Onein, who's Ra'oi Le'avodah Ve'inu Ochel. The Bayit Tosfot just are surprised that the Gemara over here brings the example of a Tamei, Korbanot Tzibur, which was a question that we asked in the Gemara, and we answered it from a Kohen Gadol Onein, where the Gemara is clear that the Kohen Gadol is Ra'oi Le'avodah and doesn't eat. She says, why did the Gemara bring that example versus the example of the Tamei B'Korbanot Tzibur? The answer to that might be because the Mishnah already says, Onein Nogea Ve'inu Makriv. Onein is not allowed to do Avodah. The fact that an Onein is not allowed to do Avodah shows you that the Mishnah speak about a Kohen Hedrot and not a Kohen Gadol, and therefore that can't be the explanation of the Mishnah with regards to a Kohen Gadol, and maybe that's why the Gemara didn't entertain that as the possibility of what was being explained by that general principle in the Mishnah. The Gemara continues and says, Afilu tamei b'shat zvikat tamim, v'tohor b'shat hekter chalulim, enu chulek. Our Mishnah says that if he was tamei during the time that the zvikat adam was done, even though he became tahor at the time of the hekter chalavim, enu chulek, he's not entitled. Meaning that the only thing that matters is him being tahor at the point of time zvikat tamim, and that's what the Gemara says. Hatahor b'shat zvikat tamim, v'tamei b'shat hekter chalavim. It was the opposite way around, where he was tahor at the time of zvikat adam, and tamei b'shat hekter chalavim, chulek, he would be entitled to. Matznitin, the loke of Abishul. Our Mishnah does not follow the position of Abishul. The Tanya, Abishul Omer, Lulam en uchel ad shei tohor mishat zrika ad shak hekter chalavim. That he is not allowed to participate in the chalukat of korbanot till he's tohor both at the time of the shat zrika and the hekter chalavim. Our Mishnah clearly doesn't say that. Our Mishnah says he only has to be tohor at the time of the zrika tamim. Damakra. Because the Pasuk says, in Vayikud Zayim, Pasuk Lamed Gimel, with regards to the Shlamim, so the one who is makriv dam shlamim and the chelev, that person in Bnei Aaron, that kohen, he will have the right to the shok yamin lemana. So you see, there's a requirement of both the makriv et adam and the chelev. So you need both of them. So dafilu hekter chalavim nami bayi, that you also need hekter chalavim, not just the dam shlamim. So the Tan of our Mishnah will have to explain that pasuk, either to say that the Zrikat Adam is the ikar part of the korban. The hekter chalavim are not even ma'akev the korban. So how could that be ma'akev a person's ability to participate in the chalukah? Because even if there was no hekter chalavim at all, then the korban would be kasher and the kohanim would have a right to participate in the splitting of the korban. So that's one way that our Tana could have dealt with it. Another possibility is that other psukim we're going to bring later on, including those that by the chatat, that specify a mechate uta, the one who did the Zrikat Adam is the one who's entitled to it, show you that Zrikat Adam is the main issue, and Hekter Chalavim are not an issue, because in the other locations where we define who is qualified to partake in the Matnot Kuhuna, it's always focused on the Zrikat Adam, not necessarily on the Hekter Chalavim. Rashi, on the other hand, brings here that the Vet HaChelev is actually not referencing back to the other part of the Pasuk. Quotes the Gemara in Chulim, which says, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Kol Kohen she'enu mudeh ba'avudah, enu chulek ba'kuhuna. Makriv betam ha'shlamim is one din. Bet HaChelev comes to teach you a totally different din, which is someone who does not subscribe to the concept of avodah and to the fact that there's avodah Hashem, then is disqualified from being a Kohen or participating in the avodah and the chalukah of the korbanot. But that is a totally different din, and Bet HaChelev is used for that. And that's how our Tana will deal with the fact that it mentions that the chelev in the pasuk. So those are different possibilities as to how our Tana of our Mishnah would explain the pasuk, unlike the interpretation of Abishol. By Ravashi, nitmeit bentayim. What happens if he was tahor during the zvikat adam, tamei, and then became tahor again at the time of hekter chalavim? The case would be a case where the zvikat adam was done, he became tamei tumat sheretz, went to the mikvah, the sun sets, he has hair of shemesh, he's tahor now. And the Hekter Chalavim can be done overnight. It was done after he was already tohor, after the hair of Shemesh. Mau, for Rabbi Shaul, what's the din here? B'shat Zrika, B'shat Haktara, B'inan. You need to be tohor for those two events. Vayika, and he was. Odelma, Aje tohor, Mish'at Zrika, B'atshat Hekter Chalavim. Which means he needs to be tohor straight through from the Zrika Adam until the Hekter Chalavim. Take it, we leave that as unresolved as to what the meaning of Rabbi Shaul's position is. Is his position these are discrete events that you need to be tohor for? Or does it mean you need to be tohor for the continuum from the first to the end, meaning from Zugatam all the way to the Hekter Chalavim? Amarova, Haidina, Mirabi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon Gamirna. We learned this din from Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon. Damar, and he told us, Bebeit HaKisa Danta, that he worked this through, or he thought through this issue in the Beit HaKisei. Or it could be, Hai Dina Mirabi Eloz Rabbi Shimon Gamirna, Damar Beit HaKisei, where he said it over in the Beit HaKisei, Danto, you could be done, which means that you could think in this way, or you could express the questions that you would need to deal with. So the Girsa being Rava here is very unlikely, because Rava is a third, fourth generation Amora, and Rabbi Lozer Rabbi Shimon is a Tana. So Rava never saw Rabbi Lozer Rabbi Shimon, and so therefore the more likely Girsa is Rav rather than Rav over here, because Rav was a Talmud of Rabbi, and Rabbi Lozer Rabbi Shimon learned before Rabbi, and that would make Rav someone who was more of a peer to Rabbi Lozer Rabbi Shimon, even though he might have been younger. But that makes more sense that Rav would have heard something from Rabbi Lozer Rabbi Shimon. The Gemara will come back later to discuss how is it possible that he was thinking about this in the Beit HaKisei. But in the meantime, we're going to deal with what he spoke about here. So now, you could explain the remainder of the Gemara as a conversation between Rabbi Lozer Rabbi Shimon and Rav. But that doesn't seem likely, because the Gemara later on is going to quote that you're not allowed to be meharher Torah in these areas, which made it sound like this was the personal thoughts of Rabbi Lozer Rabbi Shimon. So either you have to say that Rabbi Lozer Rabbi Shimon thought this and then later on told over to Rav, and then the conversation ensued between them, when you have the two sides, because you have Amar Le, which sounds like they're going back and forth. Or you could say that the entire deal took place in the head of Rabbi Lozer Rabbi Shimon, and he later told over to Rav exactly what that deal was. And when it says Amar Le there, those are the two sides of the situation. It's all happening in the head of Rabbi Lozer Rabbi Shimon. It's not a conversation between him and Rav, but that entire conversation or thought process was then told over to Rav after the fact. So we're going to read it that way, which is that it's a conversation within the head of Rabbi Lezer Rabbi Shimon, but just know that you could read it in such a manner that it's actually a conversation between Rabbi Lezer Rabbi Shimon and Rav. Ba Tvul Yom Vamar. If a Tvul Yom comes along and says, Tain li mi mincha v'ochal. Give me a piece of the mincha, because I can want to eat it. I want to have a portion of the mincha that was brought today. Amar lo, you can say to him, Mayim b'makom she'afek kochacha v'chatatcha. When it comes to your own chatat, you have the entitlement to take anything that comes from your chatat. That is a special din that any kohen who brings his own personal korban up to the mikdash, he is the beneficiary of anything that goes to a kohen from that korban. So if he brings up a private korban, that private korban, whatever comes to the kohen from that private kohen will belong to the kohen who brought it. Yafek kochacha b'chatatcha. Nevertheless, dichitcha mechatat Yisrael. Nevertheless, you do not have a right to participate in the chataot Yisrael when you are a tvul yom. Makom shora kochacha. The place where you have diminished power, b'minchatcha. Because any kohen who brings a mincha, it's kalil. So whether he brings his own mincha or another kohen brings a mincha, they're always kalil. Einu din shadichacha minchat Yisrael. Certainly I should be able to tell you, you don't have a right to the minchat Yisrael. So again, in the area where you are more empowered, still the chatat Yisrael is off limits for you as a tvul yom. Then in the area of mincha, which you have no rights to, then certainly the minchat Yisrael should be off limits to you. So he can respond to him. Uma, the reason im dechitani mechatot Yisrael, the reason you pushed me away from a chatat Yisrael, is kashem sheyafek kochi, kach yafek kochacha. Just like I have extra power over there, so too do you have extra power over there. I'm empowered to take anything that I bring from my korban, so too are you empowered. That's why you were able to push me away and not allow me to divide in the chatat Yisrael. Tidichani mimincha. Therefore, you should have the right that you push me away from mincha. Kashem shorak kochi, kach orak kochacha. Over there, we both have diminished powers. Just like if I bring a korban mincha, it goes kalil, so too if you bring a korban mincha, it's kalil. So therefore, maybe over there, your rights are no better than my rights. And so, if you can get it, then I should also be able to get it. Haru Omer, the answer to that question is that by the Korban HaMincha, it writes in, Vayikra Zayin, Pasuk, Tet, V'chol Mincha, Asher Te'afe B'Tanur, V'chol Nasa B'Marcheshet, V'al Machabat, LaKohen HaMakriv Ota, Lo Iyeh. So the one who brings it, who does the Akrava, he's the one who's entitled to it. Ba, hakrev, bacho, come and do the akrava, and then you can participate. Since you can't do the akrava, you can't participate in the achila. So then, tainli, mechatat Yisrael v'ochal. Give me from the chatat Yisrael, and I'll participate. Same question. The tvul yom will come and say, give me, I want to split with you guys with the chatat Yisrael. Samalei, umama kom shara kochi, b'minchati, dechititcha mi'minchat Yisrael. In the case where both of us have diminished power by the mincha, meaning me, the Kohen, who is Tahor, I have diminished power by a mincha, my own mincha, which is Gokalil. Nevertheless, the Torah, as we just saw, pushed you away from the Minchat Yisrael, makom she'afekochi b'chatati, the place where I have additional powers, I have rights to take the Korban Chatat that I bring on my own. Einu din she'adichacha b'chatat Yisrael, certainly there, I should have the capacity to push you away from the Chatat Yisrael. Amar lei, the Tvoyom will say back to the Kohen Tahor, u'ma'im she'adichintani b'minchat Yisrael, the reason you pushed me away from Minchat Yisrael is k'shem she'arakochacha, kachorakochi. Just like you have diminished powers over there or rights, so do I have diminished rights. And therefore you could push me away and say, you're not a participant in the mincha. But that would give you the right to titichani michatat Yisrael. That should give you the right to push me away from the chatat Yisrael. The kashem shiafek kochacha, kach yafek kochi. Just like you have greater rights over there when you bring your own chatat, so too do I have greater rights. And since I'm also afforded those greater rights, I should also be afforded the right to split in the chatat Yisrael. Harei Omer. There it says back in Perek Vav, Pasuk Yutet, again a Pasuk that we saw before, which is a Kohen, HaMechate Ota Yochalena, B'makom Kadosh Te'achel, B'chatzar Omoed. So the Kohen who does the Chitoy, which is the Netina Dam on the Mizbeach, he is the one who has the right to eat it. Bo, Chatei Vechom, come, do the sprinklings, and then you can participate. So you're knocked out because the Pasuk says, someone who does the sprinklings can do it, and you can't do the sprinklings because you are a Tvoyom. Amalei, tenli mechazev shok, ve'uchal. Give me the matnot that come from the shlamim. I should be able to divide amongst the other kohenim. Amalei, umama kom shiafek kochacha b'chatatcha. In the place where you have additional rights, where you brought your own chatat, and you would be granted all the matnot from that chatat. Dichiticha mi chatat yishol. Nevertheless, you were pushed away from the chatat yishol. You weren't entitled to divide with the other kohenim. Makom shorakochacha b'shlamim. The area where you have diminished rights by the shlamim. Over there, the Kohen's only entitlement is to the Chazek V'Shok. Certainly I should be able to push you away. And the Tvo Yomer will respond. The reason he pushed me away by the Chatat is over there, I have diminished rights, which is I'm only allowed to take for myself. I'm not allowed to take for my wife and my Avadim. I can't empower them. I don't give them rights of Achila. Then you should have the reason or the power to push me away from the Chazei B'Shok, Shekein Yafek Kochi, Eitzel Nashai Babadai, over there where I have greater rights or greater powers, because not only can I eat it, but I can grant that right to my wives and my servants. Hari Omer, so here's the third pasuk that we bring from Perek Zayin, Pasuk Yudalit, where it speaks again about the Shlamim. V'amakrivi menu echad mikol korban, truma la'ashem, la'kohen azorek adadam ha'shlamim, lo yiyeh. So that's speaking about the breads that come along with the korban todah, that those breads belong to the kohen who zorek adadam ha'shlamim. The one who does the zrikat adadam, he has that entitlement. Ba, zrok, v'acho. Come along, do the zrikat adadam, and you can get your portion of the shok and the chazeh. Yatzat tvoyom kulav v'chamurav arusho. Tvoyom goes out with all of his fancy footwork with absolutely nothing. Onein mimino mechuser kapara mismolo. And the onein is walking on his right, and mechuser kapara is walking on his left.
Because the onein is more chamur than the tamei tvoyom, and the mechuser kapara is less chamur than the tvoyom. And therefore the onein is found on his right, and the mechuser kapara on his left.
Because they're all in the same boat. None of those are entitled to any chalukah. They're all precluded for the same reason that we brought in the three psukim over here, which each one of these psukim tells you that unless you can participate, unless you are able to do the avodah, you're not going to have a right to participate, with the exception of a baal mum, where we have a specific riboy for it. Parich Rav Achai. Over here, Rav Achai asks an additional question. There's an amazing Tosafot over here. He says, Kol makom l'shono mushuneh. Anytime you find Parich Rav Achai, in the Gemara, it's a very strange language or strange type of question. Kedashchem reish ketubot, poshit Rav Achai. Omitoch kayachach haya Rabbeinu Shmuel, the Rashbam used to say, that tohu Rav Achai shasa shiltot. The Rav Achai that's here in this Gemara is not Rav Achai the Amora, it's Rav Achai who put together the shiltot. Shayami Rabbanan Saburai. He was one of the Rabbanan Saburai who lived in that period of time between the Amoraim and the Geonim. The Batar Ravina Ravashi. He lived after the time of Ravina Rashi. The Osif Hora'a, they were the end of the Hora'a, and he lives after them. And that's why you always find his memrot at the end of a sugya. Because they added it in afterwards. These statements of Rav Achai were added into the Gemara after the closure of the Gemara, after the end of Hora'ah by Ravina and Ravashi. And that's why you always find him as the last Amora, quote unquote, that's mentioned in the Sugya. Although, the Baal Tosafot to point out, Meo Ba'adub Tubot, Eshkach Ravashi, Demayri Batrei. Little problems in the Gemara Ketubot, Ravashi does appear after him, but somewhat undermines this thesis of the Rashbam. Nevertheless, the Rashbam points that this Rav Achai here is not the Rav Achai the Amora, but rather the Rav Achai the Baal HaShiltot, and it is a later addition to the Gemara. Baruch Rav Achai, Lemele, why didn't the Tvuyom speak up and say, Tein li mi bechor v'ochal? Give me a portion in the bechor that is brought, and I will eat it. Mishum da amarle, because you can respond to him and say, Ma ba'kom shara kochi b'chatat, itzel nashai v'avadai. In the case where I have diminished powers with regards to my wives and my servants, d'chiticha mechatat Yisrael. Nevertheless, I was able to push you away and say you don't have a right to divide with us with the chatat Yisrael. In the place where I have additional rights or full rights with regards to the Bechor, it entirely belongs to me. Certainly over there I should be able to push you away from that Bechor that comes from a Yisrael. So the Tvoyom will answer back. That you push me out of Chatat, Kishem Shorah Kochacha, because just like there you have diminished rights, so too do I have diminished rights, and therefore I was weaker over there. Because by the Bechor, just like you have additional rights of power, so do I. And maybe my additional rights of power then give me the possibility of being amongst those that split the Bechor. Hari Omer, the Pasuk says, Et damam tizrok al mizbeach, et chelbam taktir, ubisaram yelach. So there in Parshat Korach, it says that you have to put the dam on the Mizbeach, and the chelev will be placed on the Mizbeach, ubisaram yelach, and then you're entitled to the basar. So you see once again a correlation between the avoda and the achila, and you could say to them, ba zrok vachol, come do the zrikat dam, and then you'll be entitled to eat it. If you don't come and do the zrikat dam, you can't eat it, and that's why you'll be precluded from participating in this korban. So we have a pasuk that specifically precludes him. Now, the pasuk is written by Bechor, and even though, as Rashi points out, Eina Bechor Nechal B'machloket, in general, Bechor is not divided amongst the Kohanim, She'enu Nitan L'Anshei Mishmar. It's not a gift that's brought to Anshei Mishmar, Elo L'cho Kohen Shirtzeh. It's given to a particular Kohen, Ketshuma, Ukbidjom Bechor, where you, the Israel, have the right to choose which Kohen you give it to. You don't give it to Kohanim as a class in general, you give it to a particular Kohen. So then why are we speaking about a Bechor here and splitting of a Bechor? Miu tipuk lamina, t'lo yitnu Bechor, elamish ra'ui levoda b'ota sha'a. Rashi says the nafkamina is not whether you can split with the other Kohanim. Nafkamina is, do you have a right to give this Bechor to such a Kohen? Can you only give your Bechor to a Kohen that is ra'ui levoda? Or can you even give it to a Kohen who's not ra'ui levoda? So Rashi says the pasuk comes and teaches you at the Mam Tizrok. Only someone who's ra'ui levoda do you have ability to give that Kohen the Bechor that you want to give to the Kohen. V'idach parech, miktiv u'bisaram l'Kohen hazorek. It doesn't say in the Pasuk that the Bisar goes to the one who does the Zrikat Adam. U'bisaram yelach, tiv. It says you get to keep the Bisar afilu l'Kohen acher, even if it's another Kohen. Meaning that the two are not necessarily correlated in the Pasuk, and therefore the reason that they didn't ask this question in the previous Braita is because they didn't feel it was a question. Because you can read the pasuk at the Mam Tizrok Alam Isbeach, Bel Kalbam Taktir, and then separately, Bsaram Yalach. There's not necessarily a correlation between the Zrika and Akhtara and the Basar Iulach. They can be separate Tzivuim. Therefore, the Basar is not necessarily going to the Kohen Hazorek, but rather there's a Kohen who does the Zrika, and there might be another Kohen who is the beneficiary of the Basar. How could, and this goes back to the question we noted in the beginning, when it says that Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon dealt with this sugya, Haidina, mi Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon Garmina, dam Rabbi Beit Akisei Danta, Heichi Avid Ochi, how could he do that? Amar Rabbi Barachana, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Chol Makom Mutar Laharel, Chutz Mimer Chatz Mi Beit Akisei. One's allowed to think about Torah, with the exception of two places. One is the Merchatz, in the area of the merchatz where people are not dressed, the inner areas of the merchatz, will be beit hakisei, and in the bathroom, or in the outhouse. So how could it be that Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon was discussing this issue? My answer is, the unso shiny. It was something that he could not control. As Rashi says here, Shaita shmuato shkura b'fiv, u'meharher ba'al korcho. It was something that was so part and parcel of him that he couldn't separate himself from the Torah. And therefore, he was always just thinking about Torah, and he couldn't stop thinking. It's one thing if you're not a person who's always engaged in Torah, so then you can't actively engage in the thought of Torah while you go into these places that are inappropriate. On the other hand, if it's someone who is always engaged in Torah, and they have to actively stop themselves from being engaged in Torah, sometimes they can't stop themselves from that because they're obsessed, in a sense, infatuated with the Torah, and since it overtakes them or overcomes them, they're unable to control their thoughts while they're in these places. And that's what it means, don't so shiny. That was the onus over here. He couldn't control his thoughts, and therefore he has, quote-unquote, a dispensation because he's an onus in this situation. Okay, we're going to stop here at the end of the Gemara on Kufbet Amud Bet.